The date is November 23rd, 1988, and we're watching Scrooged. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Merry Christmas!
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the ghost of Christmas present to my ghost of Christmas past.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
See, I was doing that as an age thing. I'm old, so I'm the past. Colin's younger than I am, so he's the present. And let's bring on the future, a guest we haven't seen since we were in double-digit episodes, Colin. Oh, now we're on the other side, and we're bringing him back, our ghost of Christmas future, Mr. Frank Driscoll. Welcome back, Frank.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Colin. And before I begin, I just want to say Merry Christmas to both of you and your families, and thank you for bringing me back on the show. I love coming here. And as the ghost of Christmas future, I really sincerely thank you for giving me that moniker, because that means I'll get taller.
I just assumed that Frank was going to be the Frank Cross, but yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's too on the nose.
Maybe, yeah, it's just too, it's just right there. Don't want to be, got to keep the people guessing.
I have that side to me, just saying.
Yeah. So this week, we're looking back at November 1988, when the movies and theaters were episode 23's subject, The Land Before Time, Oliver and Company, High Spirits, last week's subject, Ernest Saves Christmas, and of course, our movie for today, Scrooged, which earned $60.3 million on a $32 million budget.
Not too bad, not too bad. Yep. But, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and listen to what we have to say.
So, the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie, I found two for this week. The first one is, "The spirits will move you in odd and hysterical ways."
Yes.
I like that one.
Okay, here we go with number two. Bill Murray is back among the ghosts. Only this time, it's three against one.
I guess they kind of had to push that in there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Apparently, this was his next, like, leading role after Ghostbusters. He had been in a couple things, like Little Shop of Horrors and everything like that, but... yeah, this was his first leading role since then. He actually thought about retiring from acting for a little while. 34 years later, it looks like maybe he should be. But, yeah, I figured it had to come up at some point. Why not bring it up now? But maybe we'll get back to that after we hear what Colin has to say about this movie in his 60-second synopsis.
Alrighty. Here we go. Curmudgeonly network executive Frank Cross is making no friends on Christmas Eve, firing employees without cause and handing out towels as Christmas bonuses, all the while forcing his staff to work the holidays in order to produce a bloated live production of the Charles Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol. As payment for his misdeeds, Frank finds himself Scrooged when he's visited by the ghost of his former mentor, Lou, who shows up and throws Frank out his apartment window after promising he will be visited by three more ghosts over the next day. Frank ain't afraid of no ghosts until they actually start showing up to help him live throughout the pivotal moments of his past, present, and future. In addition to being busted by the ghost, Frank must also contend with his unresolved feelings for his former love, Claire, Lionel Luther, who is out to steal his job, and his jilted former employee, Elliot Loudermilk, who is out for revenge. In the end, as you'd expect, based on the title of the movie, Frank has his eyes open to the reality of the harm he's wrought and vows to change his ways, interrupting the live feed to make amends with all those he's wronged while imploring the worldwide audience to keep the spirit of Christmas in their heart. The end.
Yeah, so apparently Colin goes there as well.
I mean, we had to.
We're all about the low hanging fruit.
Yep. So, as the guy growing up that was always the rebel, so had to have the, you know, non-sentimental, out-of-the-box movies, Scrooged was always one of my favorites and always in heavy rotation every holiday season. It has been a few years since I've watched Scrooged, but, you know, I have seen this plenty of times in my day. So I've got a long and happy history with Scrooge. So, Colin, what about you? What kind of history do you have with Scrooged?
Absolutely none.
Yeah? It's
the first time I ever watched this movie.
Okay.
I've heard of it, but I don't know. It just never, when it comes, like, I'm a big Christmas Carol fan, but, you know, I like the Alistair Sim, not really looking for a modern take.
Okay. Now, Frank, when I reached out to you and asked you what you would want to do, you said Scrooged is one that you have seen in parts, but we're looking for an excuse to watch it all the way through. So what is your history with Scrooged?
Well, for the most part, I just knew of it, and I knew it was a modern retelling of the Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol. And growing up, I have seen many adaptations of that book, like the 1970s Scrooge with Albert Finney, I think it was, as well as the 1984 George C. Scott version, which many call the definitive version, depending on who you're asking, as well as the classic Muppets Christmas Carol with Michael Caine.
Of course.
And But I've always known of this film, and I've known Bill Murray playing the Scrooge-like character, and I had, as a kid, I never really had an intention of seeing it, just because it seemed kind of adult-ish, but as the years grew, I never sat down and watched it. And I figured, you know, I've used this show as a great excuse to watch many films I've never seen, so why not add another to the list? And here we are.
Okay. Right on.
Frank, are you a Bill Murray guy? Like, are you a fan?
I guess you could say, in a sense, I am. Like, I'm not like a huge Bill Murray fan, you know, okay, but I know of him. I respect him as an actor. I find him funny. But, yeah, that's kind of how I am.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was just wondering, because I know you, I mean, I know you have like an older taste in movies. So I was wondering if you're kind of like in that 80s like realm when, well, I feel like Bill Murray was kind of the guy.
Yeah, and not just that, like a penchant for old SNL since you love Blues Brothers so much. All right, well, let's jump into Scrooged. It's directed by Richard Donner, who we talked about with Lethal Weapon and Goonies and talked about a lot in our episode 100, Superman 3. Produced by Richard Donner and Art Linson, and written by Mitch Glazer, Rich O'Donohue, and IMDb, I've never seen this credit before, they have, in quotes, suggestion, Charles Dickens.
Yeah, creative license.
Yeah.
Wouldn't he just get a based on? Like, don't they?
Yeah, it
have
does
like a
say based on at the end, but I mean, but it's like story by Charles Dickens, I guess, is what they're I guess they're saying he needs a story by credit. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like I don't know that I would give it the story by, because you don't have any of the title characters from the Dickens novel. I mean, I guess maybe the ghosts, but I don't know. Does that mean any movie where you have those three ghosts, you must pay homage to Dickens?
Well, as you're saying this, I am bringing up Ghosts of Girlfriends Past on my phone, which is Matthew McConaughey, I believe. Yeah, and Jennifer
that sounds
Garner.
About right, yeah.
Yeah, and Jennifer Garner. Let's see what they have for written by here.
I was also going to say that, like, there's also a key difference between the actual A Christmas Carol and this movie, in that the ghosts appear during the day, not during the night.
That's true. That is true. They start at noon. Yeah. No, Ghosts of Girlfriends Past does not have a suggestion credit of Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
So we open this movie with this big sweeping overhead shot. Richard Donner loves these. Holy shit. Like, that's something that I've noticed watching multiple Richard Donner movies, is he likes to bust out these crane shots or helicopter shots or whatever. But we open this movie with this whole scene with elves, and this firefight breaks out at the North Pole, and Lee Majors, the $6 million man, shows up. And at that moment, because it has been a few years since I've seen this movie, that's when I kind of realized this movie is such a time capsule of 1988. Like, the fact that these cameo appearances by $6 million man or Jamie Farr from MASH, they're a bigger deal. Like, there's one point where he passes a jazz quartet in the street and, you know, says how much they suck. And it's like Paul Schaefer and Miles Davis and a couple other musicians. And it's just like, these cameos probably meant more to people 34 years ago. And they were going over my head, that's for sure.
Yeah, don't forget the Solid Gold Dancers.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently that show was also canceled just before this movie came out. So
really aged well.
The one I thought was funny was The Cajun Christmas with Robert Goulet.
Yeah,
both because I was just like, nobody born, like, I barely know who Robert Goulet is.
The Simpsons.
Yeah, but also I've always wondered if these weird things like Cajun Christmas or like these weird offshoot, like Hawaiian Christmas, or like, I don't know, they're just like these weird tropes that I always see in movies and TV shows, but I'm like, are these real things? Like, at least in Canada, I don't feel like I've ever seen anything like that. But
I guess maybe not quite like that, but I mean, there's like the Michael Bublé special.
Oh yeah, you know? I guess,
yeah, stuff like that. I mean, you know, this is over the top. The one that I got a laugh out of this time, because I've never noticed it before, is the commercial for Father Loves Beaver.
Oh yeah. I know your father, he's out chasing beaver.
I've never caught the innuendo. Like, I always thought it was like, oh, it's Leave It to Beaver, right? It's no, I never caught the Father Loves Beaver innuendo. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of strange too.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's like framed so well that, like, for me, I have only a passing knowledge of the fact that, like, Leave It to Beaver was a real thing. So I thought that was, like, maybe just something that they pulled off, like, actual television.
Right.
Until probably, like, 5 minutes later, it dawned on me, and I actually thought about it, and I was like, oh, that was a joke.
So the opening scene takes place in this boardroom where they've just been shown these promos, and then he wants to see the Scrooge promo, you know, because Frank is a TV executive, the youngest TV president in history, and they've spent $40 million on a television special. That's a higher budget than this movie, and like, with the inflation calculator, that's more than $100 million. Like, that's Marvel money, that's Game of Thrones money.
Like, I mean, come on, you've got highway robberies, exploding planes, terrorism. That shit costs money.
Yeah, I love that promo, and the fact that it caused a heart attack in a woman.
Does that end up being the reason why they revert back to, like, the classic Christmas Carol? Because when they go to what they're creating with the live show, I didn't understand why it wasn't the action fest that Frank was trying to create.
Oh, he just wants to market it that way.
Oh, that's just the marketing? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, get people to tune in so that they're like, what is this? Because he even has the line of, you want to make them afraid to miss it.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It's a campaign based on fear.
Right. Interesting. Because it kind of got me thinking about, like, even though I like the classic Christmas Carol, I was like, what if you did, like, a modern day Christmas Carol, like, with that was like a mobster, and it was all like, you could have like the action and stuff in there, but Scrooge was just like, I don't know, Tony Soprano or something like that.
Interesting, interesting. Can you reform someone that bad, though? I mean, say what you want about Scrooge, but none of the versions of Christmas Carol that I've ever seen, has he been a murderer?
Has he been whacking people?
Yeah.
Not. Yeah. We forgot I feel like I'd be remiss if we didn't ask Frank what his go-to family Christmas movie is.
Oh, absolutely. For the season.
Oh, wait, hold on. So you're asking me go-to family?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. What's your every year Christmas movie?
Yeah, either one that, like, or both. You can answer both questions, but usually, like, what is it? What is one that, like, maybe your family watches or has watched, like, every year? And if you have, like, a personal favorite, what is yours?
Well, hands down, probably the answer for both, our go-to family and one that I can't afford to miss every Christmas season is Elf. And because we basically grew up with Elf. I was 5 years old when I saw it in the movie theater.
Wow.
We freaking went to the theater. So am I. We freaking went to the theater and saw it. And of course, back then, you don't realize that this film is probably going to be as big as it has become in the past 20 some odd years. And here we are, now there are children 5 years old who are growing up with it like I did. And we love it. You know, it's a wonderful film. So nice. So funny. It's something we can't afford to miss. Like, we always watch it together, even though we're so busy.
Nice.
We love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know we mentioned in our last Christmas episode, Elf, go check that out if you haven't heard it. We thought that it was impressive that they managed to make an instant classic just by ripping off the style of Rankin and Bass, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's true. Like, it is one of those ones that, even though I was in my 20s when I saw the Elf in theaters, you know, it still feels like it's one of those ones that I grew up with.
Yeah, I was a latecomer to Elf for sure.
Yeah.
I didn't see that, I think, until I was in, like, college or university. When did it come out?
2004, 2001.
I want to say 2003, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I probably saw it like 8 years after the fact.
Yeah. Go listen to last year's Elf episode if you want to know for sure. So, you know, I have to say, I did bring up the allegations against Bill Murray, which have come out against him. And I've seen a couple videos where it's like, ooh, I can kind of see where the creepy behavior is definitely something that happened back then. I looked at this movie with a bit of a different lens this time, I have to say. You know, him as this character, it's kind of like, oh, you know, I worry that some of the stuff that he does isn't too far off the truth. The one that made me most uncomfortable considering the stuff that's going on is the one at the end where he basically forces Claire out in onto the camera and she doesn't want to go. Like, he picks her up and carries her there, and I'm like, knowing what I know now, I don't know whether I'm entirely comfortable with that moment anymore. I don't know. It's hard to separate art and artist with, you know, new news stories.
Yeah, I mean, I from all, like, the little bit of research that I did into this movie, I found, from all accounts, it was a terrible experience.
Yeah.
To make this movie, like, nobody had a fun time. Bill Murray hated his life. He already seems like the type of guy where if he's not enjoying himself, his bent would be towards being a huge asshole.
Yeah.
But right. Him and Donner didn't get along. Him and I feel like the girl who played Claire didn't get along. The girl who played the ghost, like the fairy
Carol
ghost,
Kane.
I can't remember.
Carol Kane.
Yeah, like, she, like, in one scene where she grabs his lip, like, ripped that piece of skin that, like, connects your lips to your gums.
Yeah.
And they had this halt production, and she almost, like, murdered him with the toaster. And so it's kind of just, like, it is, like, when you think about Bill Murray now, I just get the sense, like, he's always been that way.
Yeah.
So like I get it's not a good way to be, but I'm also but it also like kind of like when it comes to and I get like sensibilities change and like and all that, but I feel like the whole like cancel culture situation is kind of like this isn't new, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
He's clearly always been like that. This isn't new stuff.
Yeah, he's been doing it for 40 years, yeah.
You know, I would like to point out, I actually have, I must be out of the loop, because I actually haven't heard much about abuse allegations against Bill Murray. Are these recent, or have they been around for years? Or
It's Gina Davis talking about her experience on Quick Change, and then there was also another movie that he recently got fired from. That's what made Gina Davis, she, I guess, wrote it in a book. And so now that's also coming out. And so, yeah, the movie he was fired from, it was for, you know, some sort of misconduct on the set or something, or offset, or, yeah, inappropriate behavior, legal talk that covers it up, all the silver-haired white men coming in for to the rescue.
Because now that I mentioned it when we were talking about Bill Murray earlier, and I said how I respected him, I kind of felt an awkward. So it's like you can edit that up.
Well, no, there.
I think you can respect his talent.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like to be honest. I'm not the biggest like Bill Murray. I don't really understand the allure of Bill Murray. Like he's one of those weird. And I think it's, to me, it's like solely based on Ghostbusters, which I'm also like, maybe this is blasphemous, but I don't think it's that great of a movie. But I just feel like Bill Murray has like this sway in Hollywood because he's this eccentric dude.
Yeah.
That people love for like, I don't even know why. But to me, the allegations are no surprise.
No,
but
that's also, true.
Like I said before, I just am like, he's seemingly always been that way.
Yeah. So one story I did hear about the set, as terrible as everything was, apparently they were filming this over Christmas time in 1987, and Paramount was going to make them work on Christmas Day. And Richard Donner's like, no, what the fuck? Like, no, why would we work on Christmas Day?
What?
Who knows? Maybe they just wanted to be ironic by making them work on Christmas Day while filming a movie about Scrooge. So to work his way around it, Richard Donner fired the entire cast and crew on Christmas Eve and rehired them all on the 26th.
Oh.
Yeah, because he's like, fuck that. Everyone gets Christmas off. So there was at least some good on the set.
I wonder what that was like. I wonder if he was like, guys, you're all fired, wink, wink. Now get the hell out of here, wink, wink.
Yeah. And don't come back.
Yeah.
So I also like part of the time capsule aspect of the movie where it's Frank is giving out either towels or VHS. I like how much he pronounces the VHS. He's giving out these Pioneer VHS video recorders. Yeah. And I think, you know, I might as well do it now. Let's go to Sponsorship Corner. So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Scrooged is brought to you by Sprite, Coke, and Tab Cola, Pellegrino Water, Ovaltine, Quaker Oatmeal, Stolichnaya Vodka. Is that how you say it? Stolichnaya? I don't know. I need more of a Russian accent.
Yeah, like...
Stolichnaya? Stolichnaya? Stolichnaya Vodka? Southern Comfort and Bacardi Rum, Budweiser Beer, and the board game Trivial Pursuit, TaylorMade Golf, Head Skis, New Balance, and Nike Shoes, Inside Sports Magazine, Black & Decker Tools, Wang Phones, Fanon Megaphones, Toys R Us, The Salvation Army, Dom's Corner Bar, Ginsu Knives, and of course, Pioneer VCRs. Plus the fictional Cross Meats, Bell Cab Company, Operation Reach Out, and IBC, where this Christmas, you'll love it. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. The Bell Cab Company, that's what the Ghost of Christmas Past drives. And it's a reference to Scrooge's first love in the original Christmas Carol. It's a little Easter egg. There's so many Easter eggs in this movie.
You know, I just want to say, I don't know if I'm disgusted or interested or not in a combination of vodka and tap.
Yeah?
You know, I just looked at that and I was like,
I can't even think
about...
I feel
like that'd be disgusting, but I feel like even I would like something like that.
Yeah. Do you still have tab in the States? Because I don't think we have it here. I can't remember the last time I had tab. Oh, okay.
No, Coca-Cola discontinued it a couple of years ago. But it was really hard to find. But there was a shop near my house that would have 12-packs. And my mother, you know, who was nostalgic for it, couldn't believe it. So she'd go there just to buy it. But then I guess it started to disappear and, you know.
Yeah. Now, so some of the other Easter eggs that are in this movie, they talk about Gilligan's Island so much because Richard Donner worked on Gilligan's Island.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's the Richard Pryor joke that he makes when he's like, oh, I thought you were Richard Pryor, when he puts the guy that's on fire. And I always thought it was just the whole, you know, black-white joke. Oh, I thought you were Richard Pryor. Let's pick the guy that would look least like him. But it was actually because of the fact that Richard Pryor famously lit himself on fire when he was freebasing cocaine. Yeah.
Right.
So, like, there's just a whole bunch of things like that. So anyway, back to towels. What a terrible gift. That's the best that they've got for, like, a corporate gift, other than VCRs. I mean, or is it just Frank himself? He's just too lazy that he can't, you know, he's not willing to pick off of a list bigger than two.
Well, I feel like he's just not, like, everybody clearly wants cash.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's just giving them, like, I'm assuming those towels are, like, hand towel, like, they just have hanging up in the building. And it's just like, oh, we just have, like, we need to switch over our inventory, like, give everybody these monogrammed IBC towels.
I mean, you do see Grace drying her hair with it at one point, so it's a little bigger than a hand towel, I think. But I don't think it's a wrap around your waist towel. I don't think it's quite that big. Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, a towel is a useful gift, but...
Especially according to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
But at Christmas time, like, come on. We all want cash.
Well, you know, as someone who works in a corporate atmosphere, for my 5-year anniversary, I got a pen.
Nice.
So, which is a useful gift. I'm not sure what happened to it, but it's a useful gift. So it doesn't surprise me about towels. You know, actually, I think I'd rather have a towel over a pen in a sense, so I'd have one. But I get it.
If you want me to be able to take notes, get me something digital. Welcome to 2022, guys.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. What would I want as a Christmas gift? Where I work, they like, I don't even know if there's like, I feel like there's a policy against giving gifts. I know they definitely can't give cash gifts. I went to a Christmas party once and won a gift card to Booster Juice. And it took me like 5 years to actually use it. But I mean, Booster Juice is good.
It was one hell of a smoothie.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, in Canada, like I would bet $1,000 that at least one gift is gonna be a Tim Hortons gift card.
Yep. Yeah.
I can see that.
See, okay, so one relationship I don't understand is, what is the old man to Frank? Because Frank's the president of the company. Is the other guy the owner of the company?
Yeah. I thought he was, like, the owner of the network.
Okay. I was wondering about that. The funny thing is, he's talking about how many cats and dogs there are in the country and that they want to gear some programming towards them. Roku, nowadays, has several dog and cat channels available that you can leave playing while you're at work for your animals.
Wow. I was just about to say, I thought that was like the stupidest thing I've ever seen in a movie. Like, I get comedy, but like, that was just so dumb that I was like, why would you even state this in a movie, but now I'm finding out it's a reality, so I guess the joke's on me.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, every year at this time, we do have an entire television channel devoted to a burning log.
Oh, yes.
The Yule log, yes.
Yes, and then there's also the HD channel, and then there's also the one that has music. There's a couple different ones, just in case you want someone to poke the fire, a different hand poking the fire. And of course, then
say, like,
there's all the ones on Netflix and Disney Plus, where it's like the Disney Frozen fireplace. And
I was gonna say the channel is ridiculous, but man, let me tell you, at about like hour three, when you get that person coming in with the poker to stoke that fire, like it's nothing better.
You leap up from your game of Monopoly that you're sitting around playing with your family. You're like, "Fuck, the guy's poking it! There he is!" Oh boy.
It comes a drinking game too.
Yeah, I was gonna say you can all take bets on like at what time interval the person's gonna come.
Shots of eggnog.
That was one thing that was kind of cheapened by Netflix, I feel like. Like I like the idea of having the channel, but I hate that now you can just like go on YouTube or like Netflix and just throw one on.
Yeah. Give some love to the people that started it in the first place. It's like big Yule log fire comes in and like takes over the whole damn thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So Frank is an asshole to his brother. He steals a cab from an old lady. He doesn't give a damn about his humanitarian award. Even the way that he pushes the revolving door with his palms spread out on the glass, I'm like, that's a dick move right there. Like, I just thought that's so inconsiderate.
Yeah, somebody has to has to go wash his greasy mitts.
Yeah.
Off the glass.
Yeah, but when he gets into back into his office, he is visited by his old partner. Was
Wikipedia what? Says mentor, but. I was unclear on like I think the sense I get watching the movie is that this guy died and then Frank replaced him.
Yeah, okay. But he knew him. But was he at like when Frank goes to the past, was he at the Christmas party as a non-zombie? Or is as this zombie ghost the only way that we ever see this guy?
I can't remember.
I don't think there was.
Because that's my only problem with this guy is it's like you don't really understand who he is. You understand who he is because of A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Unless I'm missing a line out of all the times that I've seen this movie of who he actually is. I don't know. I wonder how many takes they had to get the mouse to crawl in and out of his skull, though. That was an impressive animal stunt.
Yeah, that was trippy.
I thought I did think that the makeup and the effects for that guy were really well done. And yeah. I saw, I think on Wikipedia, like they did get an Oscar nomination for makeup.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I'd say it's well deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I did like the scene of Lou dangling him out the window. That was kind of cool. And the tearing away of the arm. That was a little bit gruesome. Yeah. Love it.
I was going to say that scene to me actually breaks apart the movie a little bit. Because in the actual Christmas Carol, like I feel like you can assume that everything that happened during the night was just part of Scrooge's dream.
Yeah.
But I feel like in this one, with stuff happening during the day, it gets a little bit more confusing about whether or not he was dreaming it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, does he wake up every time after a ghost appears? Like, sometimes I just feel like he's just on to the next thing, or he's, like, in his office, or, like... No. But maybe he's daydreaming or something like that.
Well, there's the one where he crashes through the sewer door, and he ends up crashing onto the set. That's how he wakes up from the present. So, yeah, that's not a wake up. The past, he's thinks he's looking at the cab, but he's actually looking at a TV. And then it's the monitor for what he's watching on stage. So that was another transition.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
But that scene, the first ghost, you're like, oh, he's dreaming. But the rest, I'm kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not as clear.
Yeah. So we also get a little view into Grace's home life. She has a son that doesn't talk. So I wonder if that's going to parallel Tiny Tim at all. And that, you know, and the other kids make him a Christmas tree. You got to feel sorry for that kid.
Especially when they were about to plug him in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and those are old school 80s lights. Those things get hot.
I was going to say he would be burned. Those aren't the lights we have now where you can just like light them up and they don't produce heat. Like that kid would have been scalded.
Yeah. So is part of the joke of with the censor supposed to be that she's the only one that actually drops any F-bombs in this movie?
No, I didn't even think about that.
Because, you know, she's always got something flying towards her to do more damage. Yeah, and she's always like, fuck! Or shit! Like, she's the only one that's really swearing in this movie. She never gets to finish the swears because she gets smoked with something. But I like that the first time that she gets injured, the nurse that comes in is Mimi from the Drew Carey Show.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Colin's cocking his head to the left. I brought that up because he loves Drew Carey Show.
Yeah, I did not put that together either. I noticed that Frank's brother's wife is
Wendy Malick.
I can't remember what. Yeah, like she's in so many like sitcoms. I remember her from Just Shoot Me specifically, but
yeah, now Hot in Cleveland.
Yeah, right. I did not. How did I miss Mimi?
Now, well, the person that plays his brother is Bill Murray's brother.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, and the one of the guests at the party is his other brother. So that's John and Joel. And the guy that plays his dad is his other brother, Brian Doyle Murray.
Oh.
So, yeah, he's got
you
all
know, his... I saw Brian Doyle Murray at a college basketball game one time.
Oh, yeah?
He studied at St. Mary's College of California, which is in a city nearby where I am. He studied there for a bit, and I guess he still follows the basketball team. Like, if you see him at a basketball game, he'll be wearing the hat. And I remember I looked back, and I was like, yeah, that's him. Because, you know, you see him. Now he's got, like, the bald head and the white goatee. You know him from whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go up and say hi to him because I thought that'd be rude, but I tell people, like, whenever I see him on TV, like, I saw him at a St. Mary's game one time. he seems like a nice guy.
From a distance, he was quite lovely. Yes.
the other Murrays, have they all gone on? Have they done other things?
Yeah, Brian Doyle Murphy especially, I see him in other things a lot. But these are his acting brothers. I think it's kind of like Chris Farley's brothers, John and Kevin. So okay. I think it's the same sort of thing. They get bit parts. They, you know, that kind of thing. Like the guy, Brian Doyle Murray, isn't he the Jump to Conclusions Matt in Office Space? Isn't that who he is? Jump to Conclusions Matt guy? Yeah. What one other shout out of people that have a small bit part in this movie is Mary Ellen Trainor, who we've seen a lot on this show. We've seen her in Lethal Weapon, Die Hard, Goonies, Monster Squad. So, yeah, give a little shout out to Mary Ellen Trainor.
Nice.
So I love the exchange about the nipples with the solid gold dancer.
I thought that was great. I thought it was even more funny because, like, it's really only areola. Like,
yeah, yeah.
when they eventually cut to her, I thought there was just going to be full nipples out, but it's just like you can just kind of see the tops.
Yeah, but like just even the line from Bill Murray with, and these guys are really looking too. You know, like the two work guys that are like, hey, you can hardly see them.
Yeah, one of the videos I watched on YouTube said that line from the
the guy who was holding the light or whatever was improv'd.
Oh, nice.
Like, that wasn't actually in the script, but yeah, it's definitely one of the more memorable moments.
Yeah. Oh, one person I jumped completely over is Bobcat Goldthwait getting fired in the beginning of this movie. I like how he times it. It's 5 minutes to get him out the door, and he manages to do it in like 4 minutes and 39 seconds. I don't quite understand the dumping on the guy that's already down. The whole sad sack thing with him. First of all, the idea of earning money for blood is wild to me. Now, I know you as an American, Frank, this is probably a thing in the States. Do you get paid by the Red Cross for donations?
I think it depends on where you donate. I know some places won't give you money. They'll give you cookies. But yeah, I think it depends.
Yeah. Yeah, cookies is usually the going rate up here. Cookies in a juice box.
Oh.
I don't know. But I mean, like, just the fact that, like, he can't ever get a drink. The Ghost of Christmas Past steals one of his bottles of liquor. He drops the other one because of the wet bag. I don't understand why we have to, like, kick this guy while he's down so much throughout this movie.
Yeah, I was kind of, like, he doesn't really have a
Christmas, like, Carol, a Christmas counterpart.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Yeah, like, he,
right,
his and even when he comes back for revenge, it seems so unnecessary to the remaining plot of the movie.
Yeah,
like, why couldn't have that role, like the role of the person who's like gonna finally like get up and stand up for themselves, be the assistant, the black lady there? Like,
yeah. Yeah, maybe that's how they put enough of a twist on the story that they didn't have to give Charles Dickens the story by credit.
Yeah, now that you put it that way.
We introduced a whole new character.
Yes. Forget the creative license. Just, there. It's our story now.
Completely different story. Why does the his partner Lou, why does he call Claire for him? Like, I don't understand the point of bringing Claire back into this story. Because that's also another thing that's not with the Christmas Carol is, I don't know, the Claire story, I didn't buy a lot of it.
I mean, the Claire, like, it, to me, it is kind of in the Christmas, like, part of the Christmas story with the, like, the Ghost of Christmas Past is all about, like, Scrooge, basically, like, after him and Marley take over the shop and he becomes all about money and work, like, he basically, like, forgoes love. Like, he breaks up with
His Belle.
His girlfriend, yeah, at the time, Belle or whatever. So I kind of felt like that was, like, Claire was sort of in that position. But I think to make it different, and because, like,
she's
every
alive
movie here, like, needs a love story, so
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, instead of making it like, oh, like, she's just gone and, like, look what you lost, it's like they give him the opportunity to have some redemption in that love story, I guess, by being able to get her back and force her onto TV.
Yeah. But it's just, like, it's even like the fact that, you know, She hasn't seen him for 15 years, and she just shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It what she's thinking doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, it's almost sad because you kind of just seem like, oh, like, she's just been pining for him for all these years.
Is,
like,
that what it
just
is?
Just waiting,
yeah,
waiting by the phone for him to call. And, like,
yeah. Tonight's going to be the night. She's surrounded by a dozen cats. Yeah. No, I swear he's going to call tonight. I don't know.
She does seem like that kind of person. That, yeah, kind of, you know, with a caring attitude she had. And considering that she didn't love anyone else, you know, I could easily see that now.
But, you, yeah, know, they show their past. It only lasts like 2 or 3 years. So she's been pining after him for 15 years for this, like, 3-year relationship. Like, that's, like, they weren't married, they weren't, like, even at the point of engaged, were they? I don't remember a ring being thrown back at him. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, I just didn't buy the whole Claire thing, especially once it gets to the end, where it's like he shows up at her work and like basically, "Ugh, I don't have time for you to do some of your job. So I'm just going to, you know, be an asshole and storm out of here. Fine. Whatever." And then she still goes to him at the end. Like, it's just like, okay, second chance, you know, that was shame on you at that point. What's the third chance all about, Claire?
Yeah, that she's like as weak of a female character as you get in a 80s, early 90s film, I feel like.
Yeah, but they make her the boss of a homeless shelter to make her look like she's this badass woman that's, you know, like he says, same old Claire out to save the world. So, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Frank has a meeting at lunch with his boss, and he's there to meet Bryce Cummings, who has shown up to take some of the burden off his shoulder. And like Colin mentioned in his 60-second synopsis, here we go with a little Lionel Luther action. So, young Lionel Luther, Colin, how excited were you to see John Glover in a role that wasn't the one you're used to seeing with him?
Yeah, it was weird because I'm like I've rejoined the Smallville, the slog to the end of the series on Amazon, and you know, I've been like the season 7, which figures Lionel Luther pretty heavily, and it's weird. It was weird to see him without that flowing mane and beard.
Yeah, blonde,
and looking so youthful and like joyous.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like at the end, I'm gonna jump to the end with this one because we're talking about him. But when they've got him tied up. What exactly is his problem with Bryce Cummings? Like, the guy's not, like, in there for a nefarious reason. He's not trying to take Frank's job. He's there to help because this is a $40 million TV show. Maybe there should be some extra boots on the ground. Why are they humiliating Bryce Cummings so badly?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's one of those things where it's just kind of basically because our quote-unquote hero doesn't like him, so, like, he must pay, but, like, there is no real reason why.
No, he's...
It's one of the written rules of film, you know? I mean...
Yeah.
And you could almost kind of say, like, did he learn anything in the end? Like, if he went through this miraculous, like, Scrooge story and now all of a sudden he, like... Shouldn't he have embraced Bryce as, like, a friend, not tied him up and,
yeah, and
had someone put a gun to his face?
And would sabotaging a $40 million production just because you've had an epiphany be a good thing to do? Like, is this really the moment to stick it to the corporate world? There's a lot of people employed by this show right now, Frank. There's some people that are like, hey, I'm going to be on TV tonight. You know, there's families all over the world that are watching this this telecast that aren't celebrating Christmas because they're either involved or watching this thing. And you're just going to fucking get on your soapbox and grandstand? God, the ego on you, Frank. Fuck.
I'd be curious to know what the original script of this movie was like, because I heard that the writer of this movie, like, he said that something like only 40% of what he actually, like, his original, like, concept made it into the movie.
Yeah.
He hated it. Like, he hated everything about this movie. He basically said that, like, Richard Donner is a hack and, like, doesn't know how to, like, make a movie and doesn't understand comedy. And that the movie itself was, I can't remember what he basically said. It was a piece of shit, but in more words than that. Maybe like a flaming piece of shit, something like that.
Hardcore.
I want to say about the lunch date that he has with his boss as well, that it's a pretty baller move to carry around your own golden cutlery.
Yeah, I should try that one day.
Yeah.
I should show up with my own cutlery to a restaurant, even if it's not gold. I think just showing up with your own cutlery is kind of a power move.
Well, I've got my own straw now, you know, because so many places don't have straws or they have shitty paper ones. So I have a metal one that folds up that I have. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fancy.
Very fancy. Yeah.
Going back to Tim Hortons, the Tim Hortons paper straws are the absolute worst. Every time, every time I get an ice cap, like the thing never lasts till the end. And
yeah,
all of
you're
a
like,
sudden,
can
I'm
I get three straws?
Yeah, all of a sudden you're trying to suck, and it's just like the thing's falling apart. Nothing's flowing. It's the worst.
Yeah.
You know, on that subject, I'm not sure if the Wendy's up there has it, but our Wendy's is on paper straws too.
Yeah.
And it pisses me off so much because everywhere else, like even the McDonald's have compostable straws, which are like damn near the same as the plastic ones, but they just have compostable in the wrapper, which I don't know if that makes it officially compostable, but whatever.
But it's saying that the wrapper is compostable. That's what it's actually telling you right there.
Where's the label? Just do that?
Is the label on the straw? No, it's on the wrapper.
Yeah, quit it with the paper straws and do that instead.
yeah, I want more of those plant-based plastics, yeah. Yeah, fuck paper straws. But, okay, here's one question I do have about the golden cutlery, though. He pulls it out of his pockets and polishes it and puts it down. Do the people in the restaurant wash them for him? Or does he have to clean the dirty forks to put them back in his pocket?
It's a very good question.
You're not going to get them very clean with just a napkin if you've used all your utensils, all like 15 of your utensils that you just laid out.
I mean, I guess it's even more of a power move if he makes them wash it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, and then bring them back to me. Yeah, okay. There we go.
Yeah.
When he's leaving the restaurant, he slips and falls in the hallway, and I was like, holy shit, is that a blooper? And Bill Murray just went with it, and I read that yes, it was. The floor was slippery from him throwing the water on the waiter, and yeah, he did wipe out. But
that's the vibe I got too.
At least they got it in. I mean, what if him and Donner didn't get along so much, how much of a dick would Donner have been if he'd been like, oh man, we left the lens cap on. We need another one.
Yeah, there's a few of those. There's like this slip. Even the scene where like he got his lip ripped, that's the scene that's in the movie.
Yeah.
There's a part where I can't remember, but like they're at a door and like Bill Murray accidentally like elbows Grace in the face, and that was real. Like she just took an elbow to the chin.
Yeah.
they use that shot in the movie.
Yeah.
There's a few of those.
So he gets chased out of the restaurant, and we meet our first ghost, the ghost of Christmas past. I always thought this was Benicio del Toro. Until this viewing, I always, like, just, you know, Mandela affected it as Benicio del Toro in this role. But, you know, I will say with the cab, some of the effects aren't terrible. Like the cab passing through the milk truck and stuff like that. Like, all in all, like you said with when Lou showed up earlier, you know, they're still definitely 80s. But even the Ghost of Christmas Past looking through the door, it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With that guy, I was more struck by, like, and I think I was still, we... It will have come out a while ago, but we have just recorded our episode of The Toxic Adventure, and I was thinking about this in that movie as well. But like, I've never seen anybody in real life with teeth that nasty,
like that dirty, like where
even though you're open, your mouth isn't like open for a long time.
Yeah.
Every time you open it, it looks like you've just got dirt caked onto your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, have you guys seen this in real life?
I feel like I have.
Interesting.
But, I mean, as a bus driver,
I see some
unhoused individuals. Yeah, yeah. apparently unhoused is the politically correct term to use, because homeless implies that they are less for not having a home. So they are the unhoused population, apparently.
I would say grammatically it doesn't imply that, but I'm not going to argue with
the vulnerable community.
The woke army.
Yeah, that's right. So Frank's in the past. We get to see that his dad is a bit of a dick and gives him 5 pounds of veal for Christmas. But, you know, Frank makes the comment of when he's pretending that he's not crying because of his feelings. And he says, what? That's a beautiful gift. That's like $55 worth of meat. And, you know, like I sit there and I'm like, you know, 5 pounds of veal. I wouldn't mind getting that for Christmas. I mean, maybe not as a kid, but, you know, like, yeah, throw a big slab of meat on my lap for Christmas. I'll take it. Hells yeah. Meat's expensive. Frank works in a grocery store. He knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so much so that we've had to put an extra sale on meat to try to get people to buy it.
Wow.
We have, you could buy 4 selected 1 pound packages for $20 for all 4. I haven't seen people really go for it, but that's how they're trying to get people back into it.
I've seen ads for that at my hometown. Their local grocery store is doing a similar thing. It's all, everybody's trying to combat inflation in their own way, I guess.
Yeah, it's like reparation times again.
Yeah. I was going to say something, but now I've...
Well, we were in the past. Does that help jog your memory?
I was going to say that getting meat for Christmas, it's what you don't think about it much, but like there is a big difference I've noticed now, like between getting gifts as a kid and as an adult. Like, yeah, you probably wouldn't want meat as a kid, but it's kind of like socks. Like, I wouldn't really want socks when I was a kid, but now I'd be all right with a nice, comfortable pair of socks.
Oh, I get every one of my events that my girlfriend celebrates, she is the greatest gift giver. It's almost always socks and underwear, and it's usually something that matches each other. You know, pickles on the socks, pickles on the underwear. But it's one of my favorite joys. It's like the day that she stops giving me socks and underwear is the day that it's going to be like, whoa, where'd you go? What happened? It'll be a sad day. So I just got a pair of VT socks from her. Yeah.
I was at a gas station on my way back home couple weeks back, and they had Princess Bride socks, and it was the scene of Wesley rolling down the hill.
Right on.
I was like, that's awesome. Sweet.
Yeah. So we then go to 1968 after we meet his family, and we get the woman photocopying her ass on the machine, and we get. We end up getting to see the meet cute between Claire and Frank and why she calls him Lumpy. So, like, this whole trip through the past, one of the first things that Claire says when she sees him in the present is that, wow, I've never seen your hair so short. And as we go through the past, his hair doesn't look that much longer to me in the past. Like, he's got a bit more of a mullet going on, but I don't see much difference, except that he's not he's a little thinner on top in the present, I think. I think they added a little extra hair on top in the past.
I felt like they needed to add more on top. Like, I noticed that the back was, like, super long in the past, but I was like, the face forward, I felt like they could have put more on top.
I felt like for a line that significant, I felt like it should have been more drastic. Like, part of it is he's got the curly hair, so
yeah.
It doesn't hang as low as it could. But still, I felt like it should have been shorter in the future. If, like, he should have had a business haircut then,
yeah.
If that's what you're doing, yeah. So we get to see Frank's rise to power. Like, we get to see that he started off as a kid's show and he chose Christmas with the boss over Christmas with Claire. And so, yes, their 2 years of bliss comes to an end on the set of the Frisbee show.
I want to say a couple of things, because I loved David Johansen's performance in this movie. Okay. I loved the manicness and just the craziness of it. I got the biggest kick when they were on the kid's set and he was shouting at the moment about what's in the box. But I'm kind of glad we got to this point because I will say this. I don't know that much about David Johansen of the New York Dolls, but I do know a thing or two about Buster Poindexter, his alter ego, which had a massive hit with the with his cover of Ha, Ha, Ha.
Oh.
That song will put anybody in a good mood. Just saying.
That's who this guy is. I do know
you
that.
You know what's funny? On the soundtrack of Scrooge, there's him as Buster Poindexter singing a cover of the song Brown Eyed Girl. I listened to it. It's not bad. He added a horn section, which I thought was pretty nice touch.
Oh, okay.
Huh. But yeah.
So next up, we get Ghost of Christmas Present. It's so weird for me to see Carol Kane young because Princess Bride, she's in old lady makeup, and I watched The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. It just seems like everything else I've seen Carol Kane in, she's an older lady. And so seeing her young as the Ghost of Christmas Present, she was also a fun one to have in this movie. Like she just like David Johansen, brought a manic energy to this part that was fun for the part.
Yeah, she seems psychotic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, very much. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of punching and slapping.
Well, yeah, like the one video I watched, like it was like a pseudo documentary about the making of this movie, mentioned that like she was kind of like standoffish at first, but they really pushed her to be more physical, and that's where it became like then she became like too aggressive and borderline abusive, and like there's the scene where she like hits him or like on the face with the toaster or whatever the appliance is. And one of Bill Murray's brothers said, like, they did so many takes and it was so close every time that he thought that she was going to kill him.
Oh, my.
Okay. And there was also something to the fact that, like, in when she first appears and does that, like, ballerina dance or whatever, they were going to, like, she went and took ballet lessons and learned, like, point technique and all this stuff. And
then they did it as wires.
And then it still, like, wasn't very good. And they were going to hire, like, an actual ballerina as, like, a stand-in to do the, like, the far shots. But Richard Donner liked kind of, like, how shitty it looked because he thought it was funny, and so they just kept it in.
So Frank gets to see Grace's Christmas. And, okay, so I need to know. Well, okay, first of all, her son's name is Calvin Cooley, which I guess is a reference to Calvin Coolidge, President Calvin Coolidge, who is famous for being the strong, silent type.
Yes.
Yeah.
Silent Cal was a nickname he had.
Yeah. So that's how they got the clever name for, you know, another one of these Easter eggs. But now, how old is Calvin supposed to be?
No idea.
Six? Seven, maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay, because, like, he finds out while they're spying on Grace's family that his dad died 5 years earlier. Would a two-year-old be that traumatized by it? Like, I mean, I know that's how Dexter was born, but I'm just wondering, you know, that's why I'm wondering how old Calvin is. Maybe a two- or three-year-old could be that traumatized by it. But, I mean, this kid is so small, he looks like he might be six. And a one-year-old is not going to remember that.
Yeah, a one-year-old did not. I would say a two-year-old could be. It could also be, like, depending what the, like, I don't know. You could be traumatized by just, like, growing up without a dad, I suppose.
Yeah. But I think they specifically say because he died in front of him.
Oh.
I don't know. And we also find out that the love language that they like is blowing stomach farts. And that becomes a big thing in this movie. I did also notice the Free South Africa poster on their kitchen wall. And then I also noticed that there are Free South Africa stickers in the control room. You know, there's a couple of places that they have Free South Africa. Now, is that just because of the time? Or do you think there was someone on set that was very political at the time that they're like, no, we need to put these in?
Could be a mixture of both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is it's more because of the, like we kind of talked about at the beginning. It's like a touchstone of the current happenings around then. But
yeah, that's
like, and I mean, like it's like I don't know that I feel like America was pretty like anti-apartheid, so like it wouldn't be if it was like a political statement. I mean, it wouldn't have been like a massive. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but it would have been like something for an American, like for them to do, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not like they're in South Africa. Like it wouldn't have been this like bold statement. It would have just been like a whole like, hey, just like an added little like fuck you, so like whoever the government was at the time.
Well, I'm just wondering whether we're going to end up finding things like Ukrainian flags in the background of movies. You know, things like that, like Ukrainian flag hearts or whatever.
I don't think so, but only because like the times are different. Like nowadays all these actors would have social media, like if you go on any of their social media and they're like about that life, then they'll have all that stuff there. Whereas like back in the day there wasn't any of that, so it's like I feel like you would put little pseudo like I don't want to say they're political statements, but more like, I guess, solidarity type things in your art rather than because you didn't have like a public persona that any Joe Blow like on the internet could go to.
Well, but, you know, thank you, Scrooged, because we did end apartheid in South Africa. So,
yes, they did their part.
They did. They did. Yes. They absolutely contributed. Yeah.
Yes.
They can all say like, hey, we had a hand in that.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela who?
So we see his brother playing Trivial Pursuit. We've talked a lot about that scene already. And then he ends up finding one of those homeless guys frozen to death in the sewer. How? Like he's jacked from The Shining frozen in this scene. And I don't think that city is that cold. There's how has he in like the 6 hours since he's seen Frank frozen solid?
Yeah, the timeline is a little off.
Yeah. Well, and so the sensor lady ends up getting a barrel to the face now, Donkey Kong style. Is there something to the fact that his name is Frank Cross? Like, is this some sort of like Jesus thing because it's Christmas that his last name is Cross? Have they tried to put the Christ back in Christmas?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think that's a reach, but maybe.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, so, I'll if I ever watch this movie again, I'll definitely think about that.
Yeah. It's time to start the live Christmas Eve broadcast of Scrooge. And the ghost of Christmas future is about to take Frank when Elliot shows up with his shotgun. And I don't think it's fair for Frank to say that he's had a worse day than Elliot. I mean, okay, he's been shown some memories that suck, right? Elliot got fired, his wife left him, he's been drunk all day, he got mugged after taking or giving blood. Really, Frank? You want to compare days? At least you still have a job. So when the ghost of Christmas future, though, does end up taking Frank, when he sees the mental hospital in the weird future and it's got the weird angled floor and walls and everything, is it actually built on an angle, or is Bill Murray just doing some impressive physical acting with his feet to make it look like he's sliding? Like, did they build that floor crooked? I can understand they might build the walls crooked, but it would be a lot of extra effort to make the floor crooked.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to know. I wonder if I have to look up, like, to see if there's anything on YouTube about that.
Yeah. And we find out in the future, Claire is a rich, snobby woman with no time for children because of that time that Frank told her to scrape them off. And then he sees his own coffin. The part where his feet start burning when, like, he ends up inside the coffin. Like, they pan up, and it's actually Bill Murray with his feet on fire, isn't it? Like, or is there some sort of secret cut in there?
Yeah, I don't know how they did that scene, but I thought that was one of the more terrifying scenes of the movie.
Right.
It was just very visceral. Where you're like, oh.
Yeah.
There's something about being burnt alive. I don't know. I think maybe that's like one of my worst fears or something, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Yeah. But yeah, so Frank is happy to be alive. He's having some sort of mental break with Elliot. And he starts saying that blowing on people's bellies is going to start being his thing. I think he'd better check with HR. And again, one of those things that, you know, was a bit of a clouded line for me, given what we've already discussed. But yeah, then Frank hijacks the broadcast and has his epiphany speech live on television while Elliot holds everyone hostage in the control room. The other thing about Bryce, like, not only do they have him tied up, but they're also, like, throwing him under the bus with the owner of the company.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fuck. Yeah. I also caught another line in this movie that I had never noticed before until this viewing. And that's when his brother is watching Frank's little showboating on TV. And he's like, ah, oh, we should have been taping this, right? And I never realized it's like, oh yeah, he just got a brand new fucking VCR.
Yeah. Right?
Like, was this his first VCR? Like, it's like, holy shit, 1988. Like, I thought VCRs had been around and more popular for a little longer than that, but guess not.
Well, I think they were, but I think there's a reason why he specifically says VHS recorder. Because I think VCRs were around, but I think there was a change.
Beta was still fighting?
Well, no, but there was just a point where, like, you could watch the movie, but now you could record the movie.
Oh.
So maybe that was the big... Because if you think about, like, being able to actually, like, tape something...
Yeah.
Would be a... That'd be a pretty big thing.
Oh, I know. Remember when CDRs came out? And then remember when CDRWs came out? Holy shit, that was a game changer.
Although I feel like there's a classic episode of That 70s Show where Red and Kitty get a VHS recorder and they have the whole experience of like, okay, we're gonna it's on right now, but instead of sitting it and watching it live, we're gonna record it to watch it later, and you're like, well, why wouldn't we just watch it now? We're here.
Yeah. Yeah. So because Frank has ruined the fucking program, you know, Mary Lou Retton has basically gotten her big scene cut from it. Because of Frank, she doesn't get to do her flip on live TV. There's another cameo that's a sign of its times. And then drags Claire out against her will onto the camera and assumes they're just going to live happily ever after, even though you haven't seen her for 15 years. You don't know who she is anymore. You've already pissed her off in the last 24 hours. Like, you think this relationship is going to last? Come on, you're not that changed. I mean, and just like, you know, 5 minutes ago, she saw you kissing a rockette on live TV.
Yeah, that made no sense.
Yeah, the law says.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, the law says.
The law says.
I like when Claire hops into the cab and she's like, you know, can you get me to IBC? And you, what floor? Oh. That was a great moment. Yeah.
I mean, I did hear that Bill Murray had a penchant to go off script in this movie. And this last scene, to me, I had a lot of questions about how much of it was actually scripted and how much of it he was just making up.
Yeah.
And I mean, going back to the allegations we talked about, like, now I'm kind of wondering, like, was the makeout with the Rockette, was that just something he just threw in for the opportunity?
Just because he could.
But also that whole ending monologue, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but to me it just seems so, it reminded me sometimes of how I got on this podcast, like maybe even right now, where he's just like repeating the same things over and over again and like going back and like just everything is so stilted and unconnected.
And
it's like
ruining
he's just
the fucking show.
And ruining the whole show. And it's like he's just saying the same thing, trying to make like a different, more impactful point, but not really knowing how.
He's like a beat poet without rhythm. That's what he is.
It was weird because it's like you expect like this is your moment. You've gone through this whole experience. You've had a change of perspective and a change of outlook on life. And you're gonna, this is the opportunity for Bill Murray, even the character and the actor, to have like that final moving, inspiring speech. And it's kind of just like, yeah, guys, and you know, just keep Christmas in your heart, because it's like, it's Christmas, guys, like, it's Christmas, and we just all need to feel Christmas. And
except like, for okay, the SS Minnow, James. It was the SS Minnow that stranded the Gilligan's Island crew.
I was screaming that at the screen. I knew that. But, you know, yeah. I would like to say, though, you know, despite of how repetitive that speech could have been, I did like that scene a lot. I really did. I had tears in my eyes.
When Calvin comes up, that was a really touching moment.
Oh, yeah. That was good. That was good.
The best part of that was when he said, you know, it is Christmas Eve, and for 2 hours out of the whole year, we are the people that we hoped we'd be. And as someone who is often working on Christmas Eve, he's right. You know, you feel that in the air on that day. And he's right. Like, I felt that like a rock. I did. You know, when he said that, I was like, yeah, you know. So say what you want about that speech. It moved me. Yeah. Sure, it was repetitive, but it moved me.
Frank brought it home, so here I'll come. God bless us, everyone.
And there we go. That is Scrooged. Now, Colin Frank on IMDb, it scored 6.9 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 38. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 69 on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 71. Wow, Metascore on IMDb, a couple of the movies we've had recently, that's the only one that's been terrible. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like the ghost of Christmas present knocking you the fuck out, hit us with some reviews.
Okay. Cindy W. says, 4 out of 5 stars. I think this movie successfully migrates Dickens into the 80s, 90s era. Bill Murray fits perfectly in the role of Frank Cross. I thought all the supporting cast were wonderful. I watch this movie at least once a year, and I cry every time when the Ghost of Christmas Past says, Niagara Falls, Frankie Angel. I laugh out loud every time the Ghost of Christmas Present punches Frank. Personally, I enjoyed Bill's slightly unhinged ending speech. Oh, there you go, another another lover. The only part of the movie I thought was ridiculous was the gun discharging in the control room. The cops would have been there. Anyway, awesome movie that I truly enjoy.
Yeah, the cops would have been there, you'd think. Yeah, there's a hostage situation going on.
Mm-hmm. Scott W. gives the movie 2.5 out of 5 stars and says, I love Bill Murray, but this version of A Christmas Carol didn't really do it for me. There are a few laughs here and there, but not enough to overcome the weirdness throughout. The film seems somewhat grounded in reality in parts, but then the fired employee coming in and shooting up the TV station was cringeworthy. I'm surprised how many serious actors like Robert Mitchum they got to be in this movie.
Oh, right, that's who the Lou was, yeah. One thing I want to say, though, about like the humor in this movie and everything like that, I want to give an MVP award to the Mouse Wrangler. That is that has to be one of my favorite little bit parts in this movie, where he's like trying to glue the antlers to the mouse's head.
Yeah. And
we didn't talk about the stapling the antlers to the mouse's head at all, but yeah.
Sadistic.
Very.
Kyle C. says, 3 out of 5 stars. This wasn't a bad movie at all, but it was pretty forgettable. Bill Murray isn't really believable as an unlikable guy, so the tone of the film feels totally forced. I don't think I've ever disagreed with a statement more. The funny parts are funny, especially watching Murray's character in the past before he becomes the narcissistic asshole he is today. The holiday spirit is there, sort of, but it's hampered by the first 80% of the movie being a total downer. There were good parts, and anything Bill Murray is in will always be enjoyable, but this one is probably skippable this holiday season. Okay, Kyle, like, you're on crack. Like, Bill Murray, real life or on screen, is 100% the most unlikable human I've ever seen. Like, that's his shtick, I feel like, is that character.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But I don't think I've seen him play a likable character.
But Colin, the funny parts are funny. So,
the funny parts are funny.
Yeah. The homeless people, when they're at the shelter, them calling him Dick, you know, because they think he's Richard Burton for some reason. I guess that's also an Easter egg because Bill Murray had done a skit where he played Richard Burton on SNL when he was on SNL. So, uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. The last one is from Sajak H, who gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, Scrooged is one of the best Christmas Carol adaptations ever made. It's highly original, it's funny, and scary as hell. And most importantly, it's far more unpredictable than the original. Okay. Put a pin in that. It's very refreshing to see a Scrooge character who is much more relatable and closer to us than we dare to admit, because we as TV viewers co-created the environment of heartlessness and indifference in which Frank Cross Murray operates. So when he is visited by the spirits to change the air of his ways, it feels like we are visited as well. The comedy and scares are superb. When funny, the movie is really funny. When scary, the movie is really scary. The stakes are... oh my gosh. People, yeah, if it's funny, it's funny. If it's scary, it's scary. It's not
the sad parts.
These are not qualifiers.
Spoiler alert.
The stakes are high, and in the end, there is a deep transformation which Murray delivers to us magnificently. Again, false. This is not the better version of A Christmas Carol. This is like the worst version. Like to say that this movie like better delivers on the hope and promise of Christmas and like be a better human and hold Christmas in your heart than like the original Christmas, like any version of the original Christmas Carol is, again, you're on crack. I don't know how to say it.
Christmas Carol. That was one of mine growing up, you know, just like you are with Muppets. I mean, Mickey's Christmas Carol was a big one for me every year.
Yeah. Mickey.
Yeah. Right on. That's all you got.
That's all I got. The reviewers really kind of pissed me off this week, so.
Right on. So 6.9 and 71 from audiences, 69 and that 138 out of critics. This is one that, I mean, at the top I said it's been a few years. It's one of those that's in light rotation for me. You know, I pull it out every once in a while, and so this will be my time pulling it out probably for another few years. I still like Scrooged. I was raised with Scrooged, and so, you know, I'll never hate the movie, but I definitely looked at it with a new sense this time. It was fun to look at it again, though, and pick it apart a bit.
Mm-hmm.
After the love that I've always had for it, it's fun to pick it apart after all these years. Let's go to our guest, Frank. Frank, what did you think of Scrooged?
Okay. So something I want to point out is that on 5 occasions of me doing this program, I've had to watch a film that I had never seen, including this time. Now, for most of those appearances, the movie that I've seen, I would debate if I want to see this again. Probably in a standing, if it's on cable, perhaps, yeah, of course some movies have that. But this movie is a bit of an exception. I freaking loved this movie, watching it for the first time. I got a real kick out of it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was moving at the end. I loved the performances by nearly all the cast members. I really sincerely enjoyed this movie, and I have to add it to my holiday rotation now. Like, I am yearning to watch this movie when the holiday season comes. I'm dead serious. I felt that after I finished watching it. And of course, you know, you could say, you know, modern day Christmas Carol adaptation, you know, I'm sure it doesn't have the same meaning as the old Ebenezer Scrooge story does. But, you know, it satires it real well, and it really kind of shows a modern day tale of it. And in a way, it can make you laugh, make you cry, and cough up phlegm all at the same time. That's kind of the vibe I got from it. I loved this movie.
Okay.
And I thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to finally see this movie. I loved it. Thank you.
Wow. I'm thinking we probably needed to close with Frank because Colin's going to bring that holiday cheer to an end right away. A grinding halt.
I'm sorry.
You can hear my knuckles crack.
Colin,
I bet.
Tear apart this movie that 2 out of 3 people on this podcast enjoyed.
Well, Frank, I hope you enjoyed being on this show 5 times because you're on the blacklist now. So, just kidding. We
I
love
think we're
you.
Up to we're actually up to 7. I think, Frank.
Well, yes, I'll admit 7, but 2 of the movies I had seen before.
You had seen before, right.
That's why I do it. I don't mean to be specific. I'm just, you know.
Yes.
I would say, you know, for the most part, in my review, you can just, like, listen to what Frank has said and then just to invert, like, think the opposite way is kind of how I feel about this movie. It's definitely not going to be in my Christmas rotation because I have better versions of A Christmas Carol to watch. And I'm just, again, Bill Murray will find no fan in Colin Stewart. That's yeah. you can just take that to the bank. Like, I don't know, I'm not a fan of the guy, don't really like him as an actor or as a person, and I don't know, there's just nothing really about this movie that I thought was, like, I didn't really find it all that funny, I didn't really find it all that interesting, and that's kind of my stance on it. Sorry to break your hearts.
We'll hold off on Caddyshack for a little while then. Yeah. Well, there we go. That is Scrooge, and that's our show for this week. A big, huge thank you to our pal Frank Driscoll. Merry Christmas to you and your family as well, Frank. And if you want to promote anything, plug your shit now.
All right. Well, I made kind of a jump in my audio career recently. I was part of my first ever scripted audio series. It's a series called Last Call at Bluebell Cafe. I made an appearance in its second season, which was released back at toward the end of October. You can catch me in the 9th and final episode. However, you know, it's not just for me. We have a whole wonderful crew of talented voice actors in that group. And you should give the show a listen if you get the chance. It's available anywhere you get your podcasts. And if anybody's coming to the East Bay Area of San Francisco, you can catch me every Tuesday night at the Up and Under Pub and Grill in Point Richmond, where I'm the quizmaster for trivia night. So there you go.
Shit, who knew we should have done an I Used to Like This One Piece Theater tonight, Colin? We got a professional voice actor on our hands now.
Yeah, damn. I just went and found it.
Yeah?
I'm enjoying listening to, like, these, like, I mean, I've done a few, like, radio style, like, theater performances, but I really, like, I don't know if you've ever listened to Thrilling Adventure Hour, Frank, but that's, like, that was kind of, like, one of the first radio style, like, drama radio style podcasts, but so many have come out now, I really like listening to those types of things, so I'll definitely check it out.
I listened to Aftershock. Have you listened to that one?
No, I'm listening to the Marvel ones, the Marvel Wolverine Wastelanders ones right now.
Okay. So what did you do just now, Colin? Did you just go on your phone and follow that podcast? Is that what you just did?
I literally did. I use the Pocket Cast app. I don't really want to promote any specific podcatcher, but that is the one that has the interface that I enjoy the most. And so I just went on there and I looked up the little magnifying glass that says Discover, and I searched Last Call at the Bluebell Cafe, and wouldn't you know it, it just appeared right there.
You know, and you can do the exact same thing with our show. You can go and follow it so you don't miss an episode, and you can tell your friends to follow it, or just steal their phone when they're not looking and start following things and downloading our episodes on their phones for us. Tell people about our show, because if you could give us any Christmas present this holiday season, it would be telling people about our show to help us build an audience, because word of mouth goes so far for a podcast. Or you could go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on and give us some stars. Give us 5 of them. Give us some stars. It helps the algorithms move us up charts, helps us get noticed. Or if you want to go one step further and donate to our show as an executive producer, you can go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon family and get a shout out just for donating, like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And if you want to connect with us, you can do so at our website, iusedtolikethisone.com, where you'll find links to all our podcast episodes and social media pages. And if you want to let us know what movies you used to like and hear us talking about them on this show, then you can drop us a line at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. If you want to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. New season, December 15th. I don't know exactly when this is dropping, so that's either a few days from now or a few days ago. Thank you for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another Christmas movie on I Used to Like This One.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah, thank
always,
you,
always a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here. Yeah. I hope I know my. I didn't mean to be rude. I was kind of eating.
Oh, I didn't know.
The show because I was hungry. But I muted my mic every time I ate, just in case. But I didn't mean to be rude. So
no, I saw you muting your mic, and no, that's all good. Of course, that's fine.